listening to the Pieces of Grit podcast. I'm Rachel Stewart, your host. This is episode 37, and today one of my really good friends and I get to banter back and forth about the Enneagram. This is not a formal interview. It's a little bit different from what I normally do, and I'm excited to bring Michaela back on for the second time, which is something that I have never done before. And one of my amazing dear friends let me come in and use his recording studio. So today's episode is my very first recording in a for real, I'm talking like expensive mics, real good sound panels on the wall. It was amazing. I felt so fancy, like I needed to record a solo song or something. But I am so grateful for Norm and all of the editing and recording that he has done. And for Michaela, who humors me and comes and chats with me when I ask her. Today's episode is nothing technical about the Enneagram, so if you are new to the Enneagram, you might want to head to the show notes first. Click on some of the resources that Michaela and I are sharing so that you can learn a little more about what the Enneagram is, how to use it, and how it can benefit you in your self-growth. We are going to run through some kind of fun things. I usually try to keep everything a little more nicey-nice, I guess. But we're going to talk about some of the Enneagram numbers that annoy us. We're just getting down and dirty. It's not even pretty. So we're going to be extra raw today. Numbers that annoy us. What happens to a type 1 on the Enneagram when someone answers their phone right in the middle of a church service? I know. I personally can't imagine anyone who would do that in the first place. And I am a type 1, but this opinion is not coming from me. So you're just going to have to stay tuned, listen to Michaela's story, and hear how that plays out. I'm so thankful that you chose to spend a little bit of your day listening to me and whoever the guest is that I happen to have brought on today. If you get anything out of this show, the biggest compliment is for you to share it. Take a screenshot, share it on your social media, go to iTunes or whatever. Go to iTunes or whatever platform you're listening on. Star me and leave a review. It helps so much to let other people know about this show and help me understand if any of the things that I am sharing are at all helpful to you. And I love to hear from you. You can find me on social media anytime at Pieces of Grit on Instagram. I pop onto Facebook here and there, but not that much. So Instagram is the place to find me. After you pause this, screenshot it and share it, I will stop talking now and get into the show.
Well, hey, everyone. I feel so fancy today. I am in a for real studio recording with my friend Michaela, who was on a previous episode, which I will link to. She has some really wild and crazy stories that you want to catch up on. And we just finished maybe the most depressing conversation about her dad dying and thinking about mortality. And I'm not totally sure how to get started here talking about the Enneagram. So, Michaela, welcome. Thanks for being on again.
Hi. Hello, everybody. I'm so excited. Thanks for tuning in, listening to us chat.
You are the first person who has been on twice, so you should feel pretty special knowing that. And today, I wanted to really change up the tone and the flavor of the way I normally do these episodes. And so today is a little more banter. Michaela and I have not really talked about what we're going to cover today, which is kind of fun. And it's all about the Enneagram, and before I even go into that, I think some of that relates to our personalities. If you don't know what the Enneagram is, it is not anything weird or woo-woo. Michaela and I are normal. We're not weird. Well, we might be weird.
I was about to say, hold on.
I know. I need to back that one up. But the Enneagram stands for Chart of Nine, and it really is just a personality test that has these 9 points on a diagram, and each person tends to gravitate toward one of these points more than the others, although we have all of these elements within ourselves. And for me, what the Enneagram has done is given me so much language to use to understand what's going on inside myself and also be able to communicate to others how I'm wired, why I do certain things, and certainly ways to improve. It's not all about the positive. You have to face a lot of the negative pieces of yourself, but it's really good because it continues increasing your self-awareness and gives you areas to work on. So, Michaela, what do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was actually going to say, many people have probably heard, even if you haven't heard of Enneagram, you've probably heard of some type of personality test like the Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinders or the DISC. And what I like about the Enneagram is those tests really point out your strengths, your positives, where you're going to best succeed. But the Enneagram does kind of go the other direction and shows where you might be have some weaknesses or where you might be masking some things. And I feel like for me, it's really allowed me to grow at a greater rate than I have in the past. And so I would say it's one of the most powerful growth tools that I've ever used in my life. And I've worked in leadership and high-level leadership at a couple different companies. And so I would recommend, even if, like, I think it's really big in Christian culture right now, but even outside of that, if you're a business owner or a manager, I think it's fantastic.
Absolutely. So we are going to talk about some of those growth areas and pain points in our own lives and pain points maybe in others' lives as well that annoy us a little bit. But tell everyone what your number is and kind of how that plays out in your life.
Yeah, so I am an 8, which if you are familiar with the Enneagram, or if you're not really, the female 8 has been described as kind of one of the hardest ones to identify with because the 8 is called the challenger. And so if you're not an 8, most people kind of can look at the 8 and think we're aggressive, we want to be in control, we're angry. Even like all the funny Enneagram pictures or memes tend to have people that have just got really angry faces on. And so as a man, that can be kind of okay. It can be seen as powerful. It can be seen as strong. When you're a woman, you get looked at as like, oh, stay away from that expletive. And so I think it's played out in a lot of ways. I think it's been really difficult for me because I have been in leadership and I have really wanted to be seen as a strong, bold leader, which I am, but I also have to get over the stigma of being, oh, that's the girl that's always saying something. So yeah, I think the Enneagram actually really helped me see the value in myself in those areas that I had been seeing as really negative, that it's not anger, it's passion, and it's not a need to be in control, but a desire to see strong leadership be at the helm. And the good news is 8s don't even actually need to be the leader. We just have a real desire that the leader is somebody who is strong and capable. And for me, I actually like to come alongside a leader. I don't prefer to be the number one. I really like to be the number two chair, championing, helping that other leader grow and learn. So
even if you're not the leader, is there an element of control in there too? I feel like that's what I have observed in eights where, yeah, I might not need to be the number one, but I still need to control everything that I can.
So for me and what I do see in most of the other eights that I know and have heard in other podcasts as well is that an eight doesn't want to be in control of everything. They don't even necessarily need to be in control. They just don't want to be controlled. So you can, like with this, you're fully in charge. I trust you. I value you. I have seen you model teamwork. I have seen you model integrity. I'm going to let you lead. I'm going to let you call the shots. If you come in and you say, I don't care what you want, Michaela, you are going to do this. This is going to be your role, whether it's your gifts and talents or whatever, I'm in charge. And it affects me. I immediately go, you know what? No, you don't get to control me. I have the opportunity to control my own destiny. So actually, I recently quit my job. And I was in a situation where I felt like, you know what, I am not thriving here. And I'm not going to feel that feeling of, well, I've got to provide, I have to have stability, I have to find another job first. Instead, I go, I'm not thriving here. My gifts and talents aren't being used to the best of their ability. I actually have a choice to pull myself out. So instead of stepping in and saying, I have to control this situation, I have to make sure they know what my gifts and talents are and use them properly, I just say, hey, I don't have to be under the control of this.
So you are not the boss of me.
Yeah, you're not the boss of me.
Peace out.
I don't have to be the boss of you. I don't have to be the boss of everything, but you don't get to be the boss of me. And yeah, so I think a lot of people do see that as, well, I want to be in control. So since you're telling me what to do and I say I don't want to do it, that must mean I want to be the person telling people what to do. But it's not that. You can tell everybody else what to do. That's fine. I don't want to be controlled. I want to be invited in. I want somebody to say, hey, this is what I want to do. What do you think? What do you see? How do you fit into this? And then I get the choice of how I want to fit in or if I want to fit in. So, yeah, great
question. What do you dislike the most about being an eight?
I think that since I have done so much study in this, so much self-growth, so I think my answer is different now than it would have been had I not really known much about it. I really love who I am, and I love being an eight. What I don't like is the misconceptions of others. I feel like that's the biggest roadblock for me, is trying to get over what other people already think. I had this person that I worked with, and he was really into the Enneagram, and he's not an eight. And so we would have conversations, and he would say, oh, well, you have a really big need to be against since you're an eight. So that's why you're pushing back at me. It's not because I'm doing anything wrong or anything needs to change, but your personality has this desire to be against. And that really bothered me because I don't have that. I don't have a desire to be against. I just have a desire to see the best outcome happen. And so that's been hard for me, is when people use the Enneagram against you, when they haven't fully discovered your number. They just kind of see the surface, and then they start to judge. That's actually one of the notes I'd written down, is, man, don't use the Enneagram to judge other people. And this might, you know, this is, if you're not a Christian, you might not understand this, but in Matthew 7, it talks about how you're not meant to judge, because if you look at someone else and you start trying to judge something going on with them, you're actually looking through an eye that's got a log in it. And you're trying to pull the splinter out of somebody else's eye, but you can hardly even see because you've got a log in your own eye. And so the whole principle is, deal with the log in your eye first so that you can actually see to help take the splinter out of the other person's eye. And so what I've really done with the Enneagram is said, okay, I want to fully understand me first before I bring my junk to the table when I want to try to help someone else, especially using the Enneagram. So I think it really is a tool to first fully learn about yourself and then use that to communicate with others. And then I love learning about all the other numbers now, but I think it really took me doing a big, deep dive into who I was first before I could bring some authenticity to the table.
So I know you and I were getting kind of deep into the Enneagram, and I forgot to say at the beginning that I will also put some links to basic resources, some books, maybe podcasts that will help you learn more about the Enneagram if this is new to you. So I didn't want to spend too much time in our episode trying to give a brief overview, and it's so deep. And that's part of what I like about the Enneagram. Like you're saying, we have a tendency to use any personality test to box people in. And that's something we all have to fight to label them and go, oh, okay, yeah, I definitely know you. And one of the things about the Enneagram that helped me, and maybe I still certainly judge people, and the cardinal sin of Enneagram is to type someone else. I do it all the freaking time. However, Enneagram is based on motives and not behavior. And so I'm constantly reminding myself that, okay, well, I can't label you as anything because I don't know your genuine motives. I can see what your behavior is, but you and I, we could have, well, so here's something that eights and ones kind of share. We can both be a-holes, but our motives are different. and it looks different on the outside. So again, just because you see someone's behavior does not mean that you have any idea of what's going on in their head and their heart. And it still is a challenge to not put people in a box. My number, so when I took a test, I'm a 1 or a 6. I think I'm a 1, so I kind of lean more toward that and I live in more of that world. And certainly I have had so many experiences in my life where people have tried to box me into being this, quote, perfectionist, which is what the 1's title is. And all of these things about being super black and white, unopen to change, really needing to almost stay in a rut to have safety and security and enjoying things like spreadsheets or monotony. And it has been aggravating and so frustrating at certain points to hear people say, oh, I really thought you would enjoy this job or this task or position, when they never had a conversation with me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I would kill myself if I had to live in that world. Or when I was a lot younger in my 20s, like my first corporate job, I got into management pretty quickly. I was a sucky manager. Like, I'll just put it out there. I'm not going to try to like play the game and say like, yeah, I was good. We just parted ways. It didn't work out or anything like that. I was awful. And a big part of that is because I didn't know myself. I didn't have the language. And so I couldn't determine an environment to put myself in where I would thrive based on the way that I'm wired. And so that is something that's so important to me to continue communicating, not just the Enneagram, because all the personality tests are helpful. If you're truly using it to grow as a person and become the best version of yourself, then, you know, use whatever works for you. I've just latched onto the Enneagram because it does get so deep and I feel like it has less of a tendency to box people in. But early in my life, if I had had some of this language, who knows where I would have been. And maybe, certainly we don't define our life by success, but I feel like I would have been a lot more successful internally and externally had I known all of this.
Yeah, and I think it's really popular right now too. So it's a great conversation point mm-hmm. where most people have heard of it, even if they're not involved in it or don't, you know, investigate or discover it. They've kind of heard about it. So me and my friends, we use it all the time. Actually, I was just in Nashville with 4 other girls that we were all in a group together and have since moved across the country from each other. So we met up there and we are always talking Enneagram, and all of us are different numbers, which is really fun that there's 5 of us that are all 5 different numbers. So you get to see our personalities play out all the time. And so the last day, 3 of us were headed to the airport together, and it was actually pouring down rain. And I'm an 8, one of the girls is a 1, and one of the girls is a 6. And so this rain situation kind of brought all of our numbers up to the surface, and we were laughing, and I was texting our text group so that the other 2 girls could see the whole thing that was playing out. And so what happened was, I'm in the front of the car with our Uber driver. There's the other 2 are in the back seat. And the 6 says, you guys, I just got a flash flood warning on my phone. It is going to be raining so hard. We're not getting out of here. This is not going to happen. We're going to be delayed. And she starts pulling up all of the weather maps and saying, okay, this is what happens. We're going to, even if we get to the airport, it's going to be delayed or it's going to be canceled. Then we're going to have to just probably sleep there. All these flights are being canceled. She's got this whole thing going. Then the 1 is saying, no, that's not right. First, they have to go through all these different things. And she's talking about the steps. And she's saying, you know what? I think that we are going to get there and we're going to be able to make our flight. I didn't care. I was worried about what are the directions to get to the airport. Our luggage was at the hotel and I had to go in and get it. So I went to go get the luggage. I got the directions and gave them to the Uber driver. I'm talking to him about the logistics. And then the 1 and the 6 are back there like arguing. And so I text the group and just said, this could not be more the Enneagram, where the 8 is in charge, taking care of the details, getting it done. The 6 is thinking about all the ways everything's going to be a disaster. And the 1's talking about how, well, technically, here's the statistics. Here's what's right. This is probably what's going to happen. And at the end of the day, we got to the airport. And two of us were on the same flight. Our flight was delayed, but we still got out. The other girl, her flight wasn't delayed. She got out. And so, but right before she left, the 6 said to the 1, I was more right. because one of the flights did get delayed. And then she left and got on her flight, and then I flew home with the one who then, for the rest of the flight, said, I just don't know why she thinks she was right. Technically, I said we would get out of here, and she said we wouldn't, so I am more right. And then after this several-hour flight, we got in the car. My husband's a one, and so she said, Wes, you're going to appreciate this, tells the whole story and says, don't you see how I was right? And I just thought, oh, the Enneagram.
Oh, Lord, I am not a six. I'm such a one. Oh, that hurts. But it's funny because I definitely don't have that much six, but I do see a little bit of the anxiety in my personality. Like, oh my, yeah, we might not get out because here's the series of events that could happen.
Yeah.
8 steps down the road. Okay, so you brought up Wes. Let's switch over to relationships. You said something to me not too long ago about a number that annoys the heck out of you. Mm-hmm. So let's go there. What are the numbers that annoy you, and how have you found those people showing up in your life?
Whew. I would say the hardest number, there's two. The two hardest numbers are a 3 and a 1 for me. And I'll kind of speak to the 3 first, and this is one of the areas that actually this thought made me think of the don't judge others. I have had difficult interactions with 3 different people who are the number 3, and so therefore I have a tendency to think, I just don't like 3s. I don't get along with 3s. 3s are XYZ. I don't think that's true.
No, say it. Don't say XYZ. What are they? Because I'm going to do it. And I'm going to say what I think.
I feel like 3s are just big-headed, full of themselves, will preserve their image at all costs, even at the cost of truth. And so for an 8, the truth is our most important asset. We are truth tellers. And also the other part, I really recommend listening to Annie F. Downs' Ennea Summer. This summer she did this Enneagram series, and she had 2 8s on, and they were talking, and they said an 8 usually is right when they say something. And that can kind of sound hubris, but it's because we don't think first. We gut check. Like, what does our gut say? So a lot of times people will say, like, your gut's going to be right. So 3s will a lot of times just reject the truth an 8 has to say because it might not bear well for their image. So that idea of being willing to choose an image over authenticity just rubs me the wrong way. However, I'm sure there are plenty of healthy 3s that don't exhibit this, and I just haven't had the a luxury of being in close relationship with them. And so that's one that I have found that I've had some struggles with. Were the 3.
Well, and I'll jump in there and say, so talking about, you know, healthy 3s or healthy any number, the Enneagram allows for people to move up and down through levels of health. And so that's another reason that you can't box people in, because even day to day or year to year, people grow, they're having a good day, they're having a bad day, maybe there's hormonal stuff. And so there are these 9 levels that you can fluctuate in between. So yeah.
And it can be moment to moment too. Like, every single one of the 3s that I have interacted with have had times of being totally badass too, because 3s, their word is achiever. And so you give them something, especially if you say they can't do it, they are going to go full on, full throttle. They're not even at a 10. They're at a 15. They won't sleep until it gets done. I think the hard thing for me is in the meantime, before it gets done, they are still pretending it's done because they want that image. And so I struggle with that, but we're all in process, right? And so I know for me, I just process out loud. I process in the moment. Everyone knows what step of the process I'm on before I get there. And I think for 3s, they internalize their process and they say, I'm going to be the only one that knows the vulnerability of my process. I'm going to be the only one that knows when I fail and when I get back up again. Everyone else will get to see the finished product. So, you know, I think the numbers that we're really have a hard time with actually expose us. and say, okay, what is it in me that has a hard time with that? What is it in me that needs to grow? So my husband is the other number that drives me nuts. Also, so are you.
I was going to say, well, you said you had a whole bunch of ones in your life.
They annoy you
and you can't stand them. But then at the same time, they just keep coming.
I swear the Lord is like, Michaela, you need to grow in this area. So the other number that is really, really hard for me is a one. And my husband is a one. So hopefully any threes that I've offended can at least see that the other number I'm married to.
Yeah, so. You're not totally prejudiced. There are multiple numbers that you don't like.
There are multiple numbers. And they all probably don't like eights, so that's okay. But yeah, ones I have a really hard time with. And so ones and eights, both very justice-driven. Both of them want to see the world be a better place. So you said perfectionist as the word for a one, which is true. People do use that word. I prefer the word reformer because I believe that the one's core desire is to make the world a better place. And so you want to reform what is there and bring newness to it. And so even when you say, like, don't like change, that's true. But I think for a one, they don't like change because most change comes too fast. Ones would like change to happen, but after the best process was put in place for that to happen.
Correct. They're actually looking for change to happen because of that reformer piece. They want to see everything improved. So
yeah, that's so true.
I could go on.
Yeah. So okay. So for a one and eight, both really after justice, but one of the core differences is ones have black and white, right and wrong, and is very clear to them which is which. And they are rule followers. Now, they might not follow all of the same rules. They have a personal set of rules that they have decided you follow. So somebody might be a one and still speed. That might be my husband. But to them, the speeding rule, they don't have that in their own heart. They see it as okay. They've decided to break that rule. Eights, however, are rule makers. And so they are okay breaking certain rules that they feel like are not important. And as a matter of fact, they want to push against the rules first before following them to make sure that they're sturdy. So you have these people who feel disrespected if you break a rule, and these other people who think you're weak if you don't break rules, and you have them married to each other. And so Wes and I actually had this really great interaction where we learned something about each other that has been a miscommunication for 10 years. I could not believe it. So we're in church. We're sitting on the front row, and this woman next to me answers her phone in church. It is during the sermon.
I would die.
I wanted to die too. My husband, I think, did die and was resurrected in the front seat afterward. But she took a phone call on the front row while the pastor was teaching, full volume. Thankfully, she told the other person she couldn't talk. She had to go. But I knew my rule-following husband was going to have something great to say after the message. So we get in the car, and I can't wait. I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to ask him how he feels right now. He just survived his worst nightmare. And I asked him, I said, so what did you think about that lady that answered the phone? And he goes, hey, don't get offended by what I'm about to say, okay? And I thought, what in the world is he about to say
right
now?
That's never a good lead-in.
No.
You don't want to hear that.
No. I thought, oh my gosh, he's about to say something gnarly to me. But we were in good spirits, and the kids were in the car, so I knew it was going to at least be light. He goes, I feel like you do that. And I said, what? You feel like I answer my phone on the front row at church and talk on it? Like, you feel like I do that? When? He goes, no, you've never done that. But I felt like, you know, she didn't care about anyone else in the room. She didn't care what the social rules were. She just did what she wanted to do in that moment. And I feel like that's what you do, is you just do whatever you want to do in that moment, and you don't care what anyone else thinks. And I said, okay, I hear what you're saying. I can't think of one thing you're talking about, so can you give me an example? And we have this long-lasting 10-year thing where I was 9 months pregnant, and I asked my husband to pull up to the front of the grocery store to let me out. And he said, well, there's a red line, and it says no stopping anytime, and I don't want to break that rule. The people behind us might be inconvenienced and whatever. And so he ended up parking in the parking lot and I had to get out and walk. And I was so pissed. I was like, not one person is going to care. I get out, I go in the store, I get my stuff, I get out. I'm like, you care about everybody else but me and I don't care what they think. Drop me off. So every now and then I'll bring it up and I'll say, yeah, you're just the type of person who makes this 9-month pregnant person walk through the parking lot. But this whole time, he has thought that when it comes to rules, I don't care. If they inconvenience me, they're not good rules. And I told him, I said, no, you know, what I did is I thought, you know what, the chances of somebody even pulling up behind us are really slim. And if someone does pull up behind us, I'm going to get out really fast. And if they see me, I'm pregnant, they're probably not going to get upset. So the chances of someone pulling up behind us that gets mad at me getting out, being pregnant, are so slim. This is a worth taking risk. And so I told him that, and he just was shocked. He had no idea I put any thought into it, that I cared about any other person. And right after that, we had to go to Target, and he pulled right up to the front, opened the door, let me get out. And I just thought, man, this is what the Enneagram is good for.
Yes.
It's what it's good for. We got to see each other and go, you know what? Wes wasn't a total asshole who wasn't willing to let me out of the front. He was really being considerate of other people, the people that made the rules, the people that might be inconvenienced. He didn't want to hold up traffic or cause any kind of issues. And it wasn't that he wasn't thinking about me. And then for me, I wasn't a total asshole either. I actually was thinking about everyone and was taking a calculated risk. So I was like, man, we just healed something that's 10 years old. How often do you get to do
that? That's insane. Well, and I love what you said about maybe the numbers that annoy us are pieces of ourself that we really need to develop and we need more of. Because the two numbers, and yeah, I have two as well, that annoy me the most are super people-oriented, like twos and nines. And I have so many of them in my life. I think the majority of my family are nines, and my husband is a two. And I, for years, like our entire marriage, kind of like what you're saying, I would get so frustrated and I just didn't understand so much of why he was doing what he was doing. And once he figured out that he was a two, it calmed me down a little. I won't say that I still don't get frustrated, but things like being a helper or like being up in people's business, whether it's my business or someone else's, but they are genuinely interested in individuals and they want to be helpful. They actually need it, maybe a little too much, which is probably the part that annoys me.
Yeah.
And nines, my dad, my sister, my neighbor, like it goes on and on and on. And the thing for me is because that gut-driven decision-making, I can be pretty decisive on 98% of things. And I always want, just make a decision. Don't care what anyone else is thinking. Like,
yeah.
Be your own person. Like, don't be a peacemaker. Don't worry about anyone else's opinion of you. Like, get over it and just do something. So,
yeah.
It's mean.
So, I've heard this, that all nine numbers come together to create kind of this idea of God, like the perfection. And when at their healthiest, all together come and create one. And so as a Christian, you know, I grew up with 2 Corinthians of we are all part of one body. And that means the eye can't do what the foot can do and vice versa. And I kind of love that there are things that I'm just not good at, that I can't do, that the other people in my life that are the different numbers actually help develop within me and help me grow. And so, like, my husband being a one, yeah, I'm not good with sticking to rules. I'm not good with processing slowly and making sure that we're doing the right thing. I can actually fly off the handle and make really rash decisions quickly because I work from the gut, which means I get answers right away. But it'll lead me to make bad decisions sometimes. And so I love that I have the pressure from him that I don't like of being process-driven or thinking about things that are right and wrong to slow me down a little bit and to say, I don't want to just make a good decision. I want to make a lasting decision. I want to make one that can grow roots and be something that can be a legacy versus just something that was good one time. And the same with threes. You know, I really think man, eights are truth tellers. They put it all out there. They give – you know where they stand. I always tell people, you never have to wonder if I'm upset at you, because if you don't know I'm upset at you, I'm not upset, because you will know. There's no disguising it. There's no beating around the bush.
That's awesome.
It's awesome until you're on the other end of it.
True.
And then nobody wants to be there. So
that's why I live 45 minutes away from you.
Exactly, right? We can, like, separate. But so for threes, like, that whole image piece, while, yeah, it can totally go into this unhealthy direction, it also is this reminder that, hey, you don't have to put it all out there. You can protect people by keeping information from them at times. And that's what I have learned from some of the threes in my life, is how to kind of buffer who and when and how information gets passed. And so I'm glad for that, because you can over-elevate authenticity and go, well, it is the truth. You know, that person in your life with, I don't do this, that's like, hey, you need to lose some weight. You know, that's a difficult thing to hear. You don't want to hear it that way. There might be other ways, better ways, and there might be other times. Maybe that person is going through some things that's not going to allow them, you know, to be able to lose weight at this time. And so I think that's what threes can kind of teach us. And so I love that those areas that are kind of blind sides in me, God has allowed those types of people to be in my life to help me grow. And then the coolest part is, when I do grow, those people reflect back to me my growth, because then we actually get to start having great relationship. Just like when, you know, this flight situation happened and we got to laugh about it because we got to see all of our personalities, but then also we didn't have to be annoyed by it because we could just see each other and go, I get that. I get you. I want to respect that. And I'm not going to judge you or come down on you, and come alongside you, and let's all do this together. And it's going to be more fun.
Yes, it is. It's all a journey. It takes a village. You could go on with all the cheesy sayings, but
yeah,
it's true. And I think that it helps you make allowances for other people when we need to, and have tougher conversations as well.
Absolutely. I think for eights too, I don't know if you we're going to head in another direction, you can stop me. But for eights, one of the things that we have a hard time with is being vulnerable, because we see vulnerability as weakness. And so what eights will do a lot of times is we won't have a lot of deep friendships, because deep friendship requires you to open yourself up, to be vulnerable, to share vulnerably. And so for a long time, I've kind of kept people at a distance. And eights, especially eights who are leaders, have learned how to share things that seem vulnerable to someone else, but that really don't impact them. So other people that I know, maybe hearing this podcast, are like, oh, you've shared so many deep things. You've been on stage and you've shared really vulnerable moments. And that is true. I've shared things that might be vulnerable for someone else, but for me, actually, were not opening up of myself. And so I realized that I was really kind of stunting myself from being able to experience deep relationships by having such armor around me. And so that's been one of the recent journeys I've been on, is allowing myself to be fully vulnerable and trust that I'm not going to be fatally injured. That even if somebody does laugh at me, or if somebody doesn't respond the way I want them to, that I actually am not going to be injured. The fear that I'm going to be fatally wounded by opening myself up is just that, it's fear. And so that's been something that I've been practicing, is just being fully vulnerable with people, and safe people, not just dude on the street. But it's been wild. It's been like,
I don't know if you find this, but when I think of being vulnerable or sharing a story, if I am digging in to make a point through a story or an analogy, sometimes I find myself detaching from any emotion that's in that. So while the story itself or the incident might be deep or very personal, for some reason, I create that barrier in between. And one thing about ones is that perfectionist side and the control thing tends to all be directed inward. So I'm not necessarily, unfortunately, ones see the flaws in everything, in ourselves and the whole world. But the correctional piece is often primarily focused on me or whoever the person is. And so it is control. Like, I need to project a certain thing. I need to be at a certain standard, or I have some kind of set idea of what I should be like. And so until I achieve those things, I just have to keep working and keep working. And so it is about so detaching from that. Even if I do share something, like, I can still kind of justify that in myself, like, oh, I'm sharing something that's not good, it's not pretty, and it's hard. But if I pull the emotion out of it, then I can kind of neutralize that so it doesn't hit me in that perfectionist side where I'm like, oh my gosh, you're about to hear something that, you know, really shines the light on my imperfection and all the areas that I need to grow.
Yeah, and probably I'm guessing that ones, when they share difficult things, they've already processed through it. And so when someone else pokes a hole in it, they've processed through it to have the answer to that. And so it's safe to share this vulnerable situation because they've already processed it. So the 8, the 9, and the 1 are in what's called the gut triad. And they, which means that they respond from the gut. But if you ask ones, they most of the time they're like, I don't have a gut instinct about stuff, or I don't just come up with the answers. I'm not a fast processor. But if you look into it more, so the 8, they use their gut and they punch out. They go right out. They've got an emotion and they know what to do with it outwardly. The ones do the exact opposite. They get the gut reaction. They repress it. Then they process. If they're healthy, they'll process that repression and slowly start to bring it back out after they've processed it. Now, obviously, if you're an unhealthy 8, you lash out and you're mean to people. If you're an unhealthy 1, you just stuff it inside and you move on and don't deal with it. So you talking about the detachment of the 1 and their emotions is right on. You will not find very many 1s who express emotions other than anger. And 1s can, like, be the most even kill. Most people will probably say, gosh, that person that's a 1, so easygoing, never gets upset. But the closest people to them will say, yeah, right. They
that's
are
That's why people
a
have
bomb.
Thought I'm a 5. Because, and even when I talk or I try, so I spent some time with an Enneagram coach trying to get typed and be perfect and figure out what my number is. But she suggested that I was a 5. And I think that's part of it, because even when I'm sharing deep things from earlier in my life, I'm fairly detached from it. And so I can share it objectively and not be connected to it. And so, yeah, people go, oh, yeah, I don't think you're a 1. Like, I think you're the super cerebral 5.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. That's one of the things with the Enneagram. It could take multiple lifetimes to really fully understand it. And that's why I think, you know, you'll hear people say it's not the gospel, it's a tool. And it's a tool that's always at your disposal. And so I always try to think about it that way, that I have this really cool tool in my tool belt. And so when I think about vulnerability and I go, okay, I know that if I go into a situation that is vulnerable, my gut reaction is going to be to wall up. And so I'll have, you know, a negative interaction with somebody and I can actually feel it now. I can physically feel me start to have these walls. And I stop and I take that tool out and I say, okay, I'm trying to protect myself because I'm afraid I'm going to get injured. I know the truth is that I can't be injured unless I allow myself to be. So I can stop building the wall. I can continue to bring my full self. I'm not taking up too much space. I'm not offensive. I can do this. And so it's great. I have grown so much. I've been able to share this new authenticity with people and to be able to say, hey, that hurt my feelings. Or, hey, you're kind of stepping into my territory here, and not do it by telling them, hey, back up, because that's what 8s can do. So instead of that, I can go, okay, hold on. What's the vulnerable response? Hey, you've kind of crossed the line and it's hurting my feelings. Can we talk about that? And whoa, I mean, even saying that to you makes my temperature rise, because it is so hard. It's so hard to allow someone else, because when I'm vulnerable and I say that sentence, hey, you've crossed the line and you've hurt me, I'm actually giving you control. I'm actually saying you get the gift of knowing the inside of me, and now you get to respond to it. And giving somebody else control, especially for the inner core of an 8, is so, so scary. But what I have learned is, so far, most people take that as you've handed them a diamond. They go, I cannot believe that you just trusted me with that type of tender truth. I want to hold it gently. The people that have taken my authenticity, taken my care, and used it against me to hurt me, it has been unreal how I actually haven't been injured. I've actually grown from those moments and learned how to keep myself safe from those people, actually, how to put healthy boundaries around myself, how to respond to them continually in love instead of in anger. And I kind of laugh when people come back at me because I'm like, you're making me stronger when you do that. And that's kind of the opposite point of somebody trying to hurt you. They don't want you to be stronger. So yeah, I've just loved that as this tool, as this weapon, instead of armor, I actually have a weapon now. Which is really cool.
And I think it's good to think about doing that for other people as well as finding people who will do that for you, but also using the same grace on yourself as you start to see, if you get into the Enneagram, start to see some of the pieces that you may not like, to understand that there is room for growth. There's no end to the way that you can develop and the places you can go in learning about yourself and becoming a better person. So if you're new to this or wherever you are on your journey, just give it time. Don't rush it. Let things come, process them, talk to people, read books, all the things. And
yeah, I was actually just thinking, do you read the memes for the Enneagram?
So I'm glad you brought that up. This is a good segue. We are going to start wrapping up.
Okay.
But if you Google annoying Enneagrams, so yes, I do look at the memes that come through on social media, but if you Google annoying Enneagram, you'll come up with a few memes, but more so some hilarious chat strings. Kind of what we were talking about. But all these people share the things that frustrate them the most or the numbers that they're like, oh my gosh, like it's nails on a chalkboard. Yes. I can't handle it. So yeah, go into memes and then we'll share some resources maybe.
That's so awesome. I love it. So I love the memes because they really poke fun at the extreme side of everything. But I got a meme the other day that says, this is an 8, and it's one of the women from The Office, and she's looking online, and she says, this freak thinks he can hide behind some anonymous username. I am about to hunt you down. And I thought, oh my gosh. So I sent it to a few of my friends, and they were like, yes, this is so you. And I love those memes, and I try to celebrate the funny side of it because the Enneagram can be taken so seriously, and I feel like we've hit some really serious topics, vulnerability.
We did go deep. I know, relationships, yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, all the things that are stressful. But man, it's fun to laugh about it too. And so that's kind of what I like to look through the memes and laugh at them and share them with my friends, especially when I see one of theirs that's like, oh my gosh, that's so you. I had this one that I had sent to my friends that I was just like, guys, this is so you. And it says the Enneagram types as this one guy just like staring off into the distance. And the 4-1 said, when somebody tells you you're too emotional. And like 4s are super emotional and I love it about them. But you just seeing those and going, oh my gosh, I got to send this to my friend. This is so them. And you get to feel seen and them get to feel seen and you get to laugh together. It's fun.
Yes. I do try to point that out about myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. My 1 is really hanging out today.
Yes.
So just bear with me. I'm going to get through this day and then we'll start all over tomorrow.
Exactly. Exactly. So resources.
Yeah.
You want to chat about resources? So I would say one of the things that's frustrated me about the Enneagram at times is that it will be coming from the perspective of somebody else. So I'm an 8, which means I'm giving you a perspective about a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and a 9 from a perspective of an 8. I don't fully know because I haven't been these other numbers. And so a lot of the resources that I have listened to might be partially on, and then I go, gosh, that doesn't really sound like me. So then I doubt my number, and I go on this whole thing of I'm really a different number. So I'll say for me, the podcasts that have been done by an 8 have been so impactful for me beyond the other ones. Now, that doesn't discount anything else. They are good. I just have to remember, okay, this is coming from the vantage point of someone who is not like me. Therefore, they're not prescribing me information. And so I have to kind of do some work of my own to say, okay, that's their perspective. That didn't fit. That doesn't mean now all of a sudden I don't know myself. So Annie F. Downs, her podcast, she did Ennea Summer. She interviews every number. And what she does is she has a male and a female from each number. And so you get to actually hear them talking. You get to hear a man or a woman. And that was really great for me. Also, Sleeping at Last, they do a song for every number. And his song is really to celebrate each number. And so it's just this beautiful love letter to you, all about yourself. And the guy who introduces it, his name is Chris. He happens to be an 8, which I didn't know till later. He actually comes in and shares this kind of overview of each number at the beginning of the podcast. So you get to hear all this wonderful stuff about who you are from this really compassionate man. He's so compassionate. And also then this beautiful song that's like a gift to you. And he explains the whole song. So those have been two of my favorite. Oh, also Enneagram and Coffee. She's super fun.
Those have great memes.
Yeah, she's got, like, she's got the memes going. She's
I think
great.
Those are the ones that I most screenshot and share.
Totally.
Yeah.
Same. And she's great, like, as a person, too. I follow her personal account, and she's super fun.
There are so many resources that we could share. I'm not going to list them all on here, but we'll put links to everything. So Michaela and I will chat. We'll put together all of our favorites and click over to the show notes, and you can find all of that. Michaela, this has been so much fun. So one last thing. So San Diego, summer finally hit this week, and everyone else is complaining about the heat and humidity. Michaela, please tell us your thoughts.
I love it. I love the heat. I love the humidity. I'm a Texas girl, and so I miss it. And I was just in Nashville soaking it up. I was the only person that enjoyed having a light layer of moisture on my body.
You're really, really sick.
I love it.
I think you need to move to Cambodia or something and live with my sister.
I do. I need to move, except for my husband's from South Africa, and he grew up on an ocean and refuses to move anywhere. So I'm stuck here feeling like a lizard.
All right. Well, there is a drum kit in this studio. I think I'm going to go bang around for a little while.
You should.
We'll catch you guys next time.
Have a great day, you guys.
Oh, hey, if you are still listening, you are amazing. Thanks for putting up with Michaela and I as we bantered through the Enneagram conversation today. It is one of our favorite things to talk about. It never fails to come up in conversation when we meet for coffee because we are still, and we'll never stop, learning about ourselves and the people around us that we do life with. It was pretty funny to share some of the numbers that annoy us and also realize and admit that we have all of those numbers in our lives. And sometimes God does put those things in front of us, I think, in order to sharpen us and to help us grow. All of the things that we talked about, plus more that we weren't able to get to, because gosh, we could have gone on for 2 hours, but there's no way that you guys would stay tuned for that. So we'll break it up and we'll just do it in little chunks. But in the show notes, you're going to find a lot of resources to help you get started or continue on your journey in self-growth and discovery. Be sure to share this episode with someone who might enjoy it or who could use it as a tool in their own journey. Take a minute before you click out of this. Right from this screen, you can actually share this episode with someone. You can text it or email it directly to them if they would enjoy hearing a little bit about the Enneagram and some of the quirks that Michaela and I have. I really want to thank you for listening today. I know you have a ton of other things that you could be doing with your time. Hopefully you're multitasking. I love to clean when I'm listening to other podcasts. I hope this challenges you to become the best possible version of yourself. Get out there and live louder.